Rebel of the Keys is a documentary about the extraordinary life of Polish pianist and composer Andrzej Tchaikovsky. Describing himself proudly as a Jewish homosexual communist, Tchaikovsky scorned the limelight and sabotaged his own international career as a pianist because he wanted to compose. His opera, The Merchant of Venice, had its premiere at the Bregenz Opera Festival in 2013, thanks in large part to musicologist Anastasia Belina Johnson, who has researched Tchaikovsky extensively from the Warsaw Ghetto survival to touring the world as the successor to Arthur Rubinstein. Anastasia is our guest. Once we've heard one of Tchaikovsky's works, this is the pianist Colin Stone playing the first of his inventions for piano. Pianist Colin Stone playing the first of Andrzej Tchaikovsky's Inventions for Piano, Opus 2. Joining us now from our Auckland studio is musicologist and researcher Anastasia Belina Johnson, who has done so much work into Tchaikovsky's life that she has written a book about him and also been part of the film Rebel of the Keys, a documentary on the subject. She teaches at the Royal College in London, but was born in Siberia and spent some years in New Zealand from about the age of 21. Welcome to Upbeat, Anastasia. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
How did you first come across this man?
I was introduced to Andrzej Tchaikovsky's name by a colleague and a friend that I have in London, who mentioned his name to me and mentioned an opera that Tchaikovsky wrote, The Merchant of Venice. And of course, neither the composer nor the opera were known to me at that time. And I sort of forgot about them. And then a meeting was arranged a few months later with the people who knew Tchaikovsky. And we all gathered around and decided that it would be really nice to do something to bring his name back into the public knowledge. And, you know, I took one look at his diaries that were left after his death, and it was became apparent that he was extraordinary person, very, very interesting, very complex and complicated, a true artist and a genius. And it was kind of self-explanatory that we had to do something about him, that it was almost criminal to leave someone like that in a dustbin of history.
Particularly with the name that he adopted. Of course, a lot of people confuse him with the Russian composer. There is no relationship. Tell us about his early life and how he ended up with this name.
Well, his early life, he spent 4 very happy years as a child in Warsaw. And of course, then the war started. He was born in 1935. So he did survive the ghetto thanks to his grandmother, who smuggled him out. He dyed his eyelashes blonde and his hair blonde and dressed him up as a girl and literally led him out. He spent the rest of the war years in hiding. So she led him out in 1942. And it's only in 1945, when the war ended, that he was able to, you know, turn his attention to music, because he always had musical talent from his very, very early years. you know, it was obvious straight away that he had a huge talent for music. He became, you know, a brilliant pianist, what seems to be in a, you know, a flash, and always had a talent for composition. So he kind of developed as a composer and a pianist at the same time. And everybody who knows him, who still has memories of him, remembers that even in those early years, the phenomenal musical memory that he had, this ability, incredible ability to just look at a piece of music and play it. And thanks to that, he had a brilliant start, musical start. But as you mentioned earlier, because of his difficult character and kind of distrust and dislike of this idea of a career, he didn't really have a career that he could have done. But that was also partly, of course, because he wanted to compose so much.
He sounds like a very conflicted man, but when you think of those early years, particularly 3 or 4 years hiding from the Nazis, being, you know, literally kept in a cupboard for long periods of time, it's no wonder it was such a conflicted personality.
Absolutely. And for an impressionable young boy to be confined to a wardrobe of a stranger for several weeks, maybe months, we don't really know exactly how long he spent there, was really traumatic. And of course, that combined with the loss of his mother only a few weeks after he left the ghetto or escaped the ghetto, traumatized him for the rest of his life. And it is only really 2 years before he died that he started to come to grips with his own history, and he started, you know, rediscovering himself and finding himself as a person.
The film Rebel of the Keys is such an interesting portrayal, because there we have this incredibly talented man, and there's some quite a bit of film footage of him speaking with, you know, some of the top artists of the day, because he was part of the set in London that included Yehudi Menuhin and his family, some extremely important people at the time in the music in music circles, people like Baron Boyme or Jacqueline Dupre, all those wonderful other artists. Did he find his milieu there, or was he never really totally at home in that environment?
He was never really totally at home with people, I think, for the majority of his life. He had very close friends, of course, you know, 2 or 3 very close friends. But he always struggled being a part of a social circle, partly because he never really learned social skills that we all learn, you know, in the playground when we have kind of normal, if one might say, childhood. And it was very difficult for him because he built up these images of people. And when he had to deal with the real person in front of him, that's what he found really difficult. And, of course, he is very well known for upsetting people and for finishing friendships and relationships, you know, very abruptly. But that is kind of not expected, but very characteristic of someone with his past.
There's a really interesting part of your film. You, at the very beginning of it, this film that you've been involved with for some years, Anastasia, you meet the woman that he had a relationship with when he was studying in Warsaw. I think her name is Helenka. I'm not sure what her surname was. And she's one of those people who her life was changed by Andrei. But unfortunately, their relationship really disintegrated when, after many, many years, he brought her to London. Tell us about his relationship with women.
Oh, very complicated. He always had this idea, even though he was a homosexual and he knew, again, from quite an early age about it, he always had an idea that there would be a woman in his life who would come and save him, and that's his own words, you know, she would come and save me, I guess, from himself, from homosexuality, I don't really know. He had a very difficult relationship with his grandmother, so she was the only woman in his life from the beginning, from his survival, I guess, until teenagehood. So he had a very difficult relationship with her. When he met Helenka, I guess he did have a feeling that she might be this woman who would save him. But of course, you know, no one could have done that because he was who he was. And I think they had a very beautiful relationship. They were not really together in the sense of, you know, a man and a woman together in a relationship. They were friends, and they had a very deep understanding between each other, and that partly is shown in the wonderful correspondence that they left behind and that has been published in English just recently.
Well, she loved him, didn't she? She really did.
Loved him. He was the love of her life, and she still does. You know, there is still an Andrei Tchaikovsky shaped gap in her life. And when I go to Warsaw, I see her every time, and we of course talk about him. And she still deeply feels about him. But again, that is something that he was able to do. This impression they created, he created on everybody who knew him. That, you know, people say that if you've known him for 2 minutes of your life, you will remember forever those 2 minutes.
I'm talking to Anastasia Belina Johnson about a film she has been involved with about the Polish pianist and composer Andrzej Tchaikovsky. Now, the film, how did that come about? I mean, you'd already written a lot of research. You'd spent a long time finding out about him. I think you were involved in the production, the first production of his opera, which was done posthumously, The Merchant of Venice. What about the film, Anastasia?
Well, Eva, this would have been the traditional route, but no. The film came about, or rather we started making the film, when I knew very little about Tchaikovsky. The three projects, the opera, the film and the book, happened side by side. A team of people came together and we decided that we needed to do something about him. And we thought that a film about his life, maybe bringing in his diaries, bringing in some music, would be really good. So we started to think, how could we sort of marry it all up together and show him off? During the process of the film, David Pountney, who was at that time intendant of Bregenz Opera Festival, he accepted the film, the opera, The Merchant of Venice, for production or for the world premiere, in fact. So we had this wonderful opportunity to show Tchaikovsky's life by tracing not only his history, but also tracing the road of or the path of his opera to the world stage. And it is only when David decided to accept The Merchant of Venice that he told me, well, we need a book about him as well, and you know, perhaps you will write it. So I knew that I had to write the book. I had a very limited amount of time to do it and to bring it to the world in such a short space of time. I decided that probably editing or selecting and editing his diaries would be a good idea. So I wrote a biography or biographical introduction to him and then presented some of his absolutely fascinating diaries. And of course, you know, the film itself, working on the film and discovering the composer, the man, the pianist, step by step, was a fascinating experience. And I consider myself to be very lucky as a music historian to have been involved in such an interesting and challenging and inspiring project.
I think fair to say, Anastasia, this man has changed your life a little bit.
Absolutely. Yes, well, for about 3 or 4 months, when I had to transcribe his diaries word by word, I felt I was him. Every time I would look up from my laptop, I felt I was Andrei Tchaikovsky. You know, his thoughts were in my head, and I felt I was behaving like him. I found it very difficult to be around people, actually, at that particular time. So it wasn't all smooth sailing. It was certainly quite traumatic at certain points. And again, I feel quite fortunate to be able to almost relive somebody's life through my own body, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, he was such a forceful personality. Like you said, you met him once, you never forgot him. He drove all his friends completely crazy because he was so passionate, but also so damned annoying, like sabotaging his own career, doing crazy things like doing the Bach Goldberg variations for an encore. I mean, you know, he had an invitation to play the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra and he didn't want to even do that.
That's right. Well, that just shows that he... You know, if he really wanted to have an international high-flying career, every single opportunity was available to him. But that is not what he held dearly. And I think that he didn't feel authentic, I guess, or true to himself if playing the piano for money was all he could do. He desperately wanted to be alone, to compose, to be with his own musical thoughts. And of course, you know, he did try to do that for 6 months a year. He would travel, and for 6 months per year he would compose. But that, of course, you cannot maintain a career of either sort, really, if you do it like that. Because as a pianist, you need to stay in, you know, public's consciousness all the time. So you can't disappear for 6 months and then resurface again. And that what drove his agents completely crazy.
He did tour quite extensively in the 70s. He even came to New Zealand, didn't he?
He did. He spent quite some time in New Zealand. He loved it. And New Zealand actually became the place where he started to accept himself as he was. In 1977, he was here and he fell in love with someone in New Zealand in Christchurch. He started learning transcendental meditation here. And for me, a very poignant entry in one of his diaries, I think it's 6th of March, 1977, says that, you know, he became on this day a member of a human race, a conscious member of a human race. And he felt that the world was finally home. And that is a hugely significant point for somebody with his past to arrive to. And New Zealand certainly changed his life. You know, I can relate to it because New Zealand changed my life. You know, I arrived here in my, well, relatively early years, and New Zealand showed me that the world is full of possibilities and one can do anything one wants.
Because you were born in Siberia, but your father had immigrated to New Zealand, I think, and he was a musician?
That's right. My father was a musician, composer, and in fact, the reason I accepted this whole project, or rather threw myself into it, was because my father died at the age of 46 of cancer, just like Andrei Tchaikovsky, and they were both immigrants and musicians. So I just thought, I have to do this, because it is clearly some sort of a sign for me. But yes, you know, I had a Siberian Soviet Union upbringing, and then here I was in New Zealand, and, you know, the world, kind of the word opportunity is something that I learned for the first time in New Zealand when I realized that actually one could do anything, and I realized what freedom really meant.
That's an extraordinary thing for you to say, and you're so young, you came here at 21. How do you think you came to those realizations here? What happened?
I went to the University of Auckland, and I remember I was at that stage, I think 25, 24 maybe, and I went to the lecture room, and there was a lady in the first row in her 50s or maybe even early 60s. And of course, for somebody, you know, from my background, when you go to the university at the age of 17, 18 maybe, I just thought, how wonderful. It means that it's never too late to do whatever you want in life. And I just thought that this was a marvelous thing to behold, seeing somebody, you know, doing what they're clearly passionate about later in life. And that is what I think made me who I am. I believe that if you want to do something, you can do it at any stage in your life, at any age, at any point.
And your work now, I mean, you're back in Auckland with some involvement at the university there, and you have a job at the Royal College of Music in London. What do you do primarily, Anastasia?
Oh, there is no simple
when you're not researching crazy pianists, that is.
Well, as my job at the Royal College of Music is a demanding one. I am assistant head of undergraduate programs there, so it encompasses many things: administration, teaching, research, writing. But the film, working on the film, made me really interested in filmmaking. And after we finished this project, I decided to go off and make a couple of films, you know, of my own, I guess. So I'll be working on a few documentaries that are currently in planning and making that I'll start filming in July or in the summer for one of them. So I guess, yeah, this experience showed me that one doesn't need to confine oneself to one path or you know, to one task. And being a music historian means I could do many, many different things, whether it is writing, presenting, directing operas or film, or creating films.
So, Anastasia, Mr. Tchaikovsky has really affected you in this way as well, because there you go, you've become a filmmaker almost. Do you think if he'd survived, he could have had a career as a composer? Was he good enough?
Yes, absolutely. He was wonderful. I mean, his music is very complex, but I don't feel it's complicated. One can really understand what, you know, the processes that went on in his mind. And although some people do call his music music for musicians, because sure, some degree of understanding perhaps is needed for some of his more kind of deeper or darker pieces, although it is arguable. I think his music, his opera, for instance, really accessible. It really touches the deepest emotions, you know, the universal truths and emotions that anybody can relate to. And I firmly believe that had he lived, he would be a household name. We would know who Andrei Tchaikovsky is as a composer as well as a pianist.
The Merchant of Venice, I think, has had a few other performances since the initial premiere at the Bregenz Opera Festival. It's been done in London now?
Well, it first went to Warsaw after Bregenz.
Yeah.
Then it went to Cardiff and travelled around North England. And it is coming to Covent Garden in July, 19th and 20th of July. There'll be two performances there. And for Andrei Tchaikovsky, that is a phenomenal achievement. And we're all immensely proud that, you know, his opera finally made it to one of the greatest operatic stages in the world.
And your film has been shown already, I think, in New Zealand, but you're hoping to get more screenings a little bit later in the year.
That's right. There are negotiations and talks going on at the moment, and perhaps the film will be shown here again in June, but you know, the dates are not yet confirmed, and it will be screened at some festivals around the world before it you know, gets a general release. So it's been really wonderful to see you know, the opera and the film and the book traveling around.
Well, congratulations on the film, at least, Anastasia. I haven't read the book yet, but it's a truly wonderful portrait of an enfant terrible who is quite unforgettable once you've seen him in action, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Anastasia.
Thank you.
Anastasia Belina Johnson talking about Andrei Tchaikovsky. And we're going to hear one of his other works. This is his piano sonata. This is the second movement of it, and the pianist is Nico de Villiers.
Thank you.
pianist Nico de Villiers, and a piece written by Andrei Tchaikovsky in 1958, the Piano Sonata, that was the Largo. It comes from a CD entitled Andrei Tchaikovsky, Music for Piano, Volume 1. I was speaking to a filmmaker, a writer and musicologist, Anastasia Belina Johnson, about the film Rebel of the Keys and also her work into this Polish pianist and composer who died in the 1980s at the age of 46.